kind of a show are you guys putting on here today?
The Picture Show on News Talk.
Now, Mark, I know this is a tall order, but can you begin by presenting listeners with a kind of summary of Rock Hudson's life and career and how he was seen in Hollywood in the 50s and 60s?
It's a remarkable life and career, and I like to think of it as sort of being very much cinematically scaled. This is someone that faced kind of dramatic circumstances at virtually every turn of their existence. He was born in Winnetka, Illinois in 1925. Unfortunately, it came into life in sort of bleak circumstances, as it were. His biological father, Roy Schurer, abandoned the family when Rock was about 5 years old. And then later on, a few years later, Rock's mother remarried sort of an alcoholic and abusive former Marine named Wallace Fitzgerald. So unfortunately, Rock's early years in Illinois were rather sad and, you know, a very challenging circumstances that he had to grapple with. So eventually he relocated to the West Coast for two reasons. One, to fulfill this sort of unspoken ambition to become an actor and a screen actor specifically. And then also to hopefully reunite with his biological father. Well, that didn't really pan out, but within a few short years, Rock did meet this very influential, sort of controlling and crafty omnipresent agent named Henry Wilson, who represented Rock from the late 1940s until the mid-60s. And he proved to be a very pivotal figure in Hudson's life and career. Wilson, as we now know, represented this kind of eye-filling platoon of photogenic, strapping, camera-ready hunks like Tab Hunter, Rory Calhoun, Troy Donahue. And Wilson, we would sort of look at him today as sort of a cross between Harvey Weinstein and Henry Higgins. You know, on the one hand, he's a very proficient star maker who could take a new recruit like a Rock Hudson and who's very pleasing to the eye but has no formal acting training. And Wilson could sort of transform him into Universal Studios resident Adonis. On the darker flip side of things, Henry Wilson was this rather flagrant predator who was overseeing, I guess, what we could term sort of the busiest all-male casting couch in the business. And, you know, in today's climate, cultural climate, Wilson would be branded with his own hashtag. He certainly wouldn't pass muster in the Me Too movement. But in terms of Rock Hudson, he proves to be really instrumental in terms of turning him into an employable actor and then ultimately a very bankable leading man and one of the number one box office draws in the late 1950s, early 60s. And if we're talking about Hudson's career, it's kind of divided into three sections, as I like to think of it. The first section, where there's this ascent to stardom, is Universal is looking at him, you know, here's this 6'4" strapping hunk. Well, what are we going to feature him in? Let's test him out in a variety of roles, whether he's playing Indians or Arabs or prize fighters in this succession of cheap but entertaining adventure films. Then they figure out, well, maybe we do have a subtler actor here than we first recognized, and he sort of looks like Prince Charming, so let's put him in some romantic melodramas opposite Oscar winner Jane Wyman, and we'll have them directed by Douglas Sirk. And those proved to be, you know, that's the first time that Universal hit upon sort of the winning formula with Rock Hudson, that he's, you know, we have this very photogenic, handsome guy. And of course, Bobby Soxer is all over the world. You know, this is the first time that they really strike gold with Rock Hudson. Then after a while, he wants to prove that he's a legitimate leading man, that he has some real acting chops. So he asked to be loaned out to Warner Brothers to appear in this sweeping adaptation of Edna Ferber's bestseller Giant. And now he's going to appear opposite James Dean and Elizabeth Taylor, directed by George Stevens. And it's, you know, a very high-caliber, Oscar-credentialed film.
Yeah. And when you say loaned out, you mean loaned out from Universal, was it?
Correct, yeah. Because Universal would tend to, once they hit upon a winning formula with you, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So they would put Rock, you know, into the same sort of, you know, romantic melodramas that he had struck gold with Jane Wyman. Later on, they figure out, as late as 1955, well, wow, this guy has a terrific comedic flair, and they cast him in Pillow Talk, which, if you can believe it, is, you know, back in the day, Rock considered that script rather risque and daring. But this proves to be the real blockbuster gold mine, you know, and he and Doris Day and Tony Randall end up appearing in this trio of very hugely successful box office comedies that are all sort of bedroom farces, really pushing the envelope for the late 50s, early 60s. And eventually Rock, you know, being Rock, sort of grew tired of that formula and said, well, I really want to diversify and show that I can do other things besides the Pillow Talk formula. This is when he, you know, takes on very risky projects like John Frankenheimer's cult film Seconds, or he plays the heavy in Roger Vadim's Pretty Maids All in a Row, or he's in a quasi-musical with Julie Andrews called Darling Lily. And what's interesting is the more he attempts to diversify and show that he is this very versatile leading man, the more Rock's fan base resists it. They don't want to see him doing something other than the handsome hero in Giant. They don't want to see him, you know, take on things that are dark or more risky. So it's ironic that when Rock is really hitting his stride as an actor in the late 60s, early 70s, this is when the leading man roles dry up and audiences are moving on to a different kind of star, a counterculture star like a Jack Nicholson, a Dustin Hoffman, an Al Pacino. And Rock's brand of matinee idol, you know, is suddenly considered passé.
But he was, for a period, he was the biggest star in the world, and in spite of the fact that he was, well, I suppose, a known gay man. He had films like Magnificent Obsession, All That Heaven Allows, Written on the Wind, Giant, A Farewell to Arms, Pillow Talk, and as you say, a string of romantic comedies to his credit.
Right. Yeah, there is this period where he really ascends, and he, for almost a decade, he's in the top of the box office exhibitor polls. He's always ranking in the top 10. So he's hugely popular, and yet at the same time, as we know, he's working this very dangerous tightrope act. You know, if you happen to be a closeted movie star back in the 50s, whether you were Rock or Van Johnson or Montgomery Clift, you're working within the studio system that existed in Hollywood in those days, but you're also in a very precarious position. You know, your bosses at the studio, there's a sort of ironclad expectation that a star would never do anything in his private life to embarrass his bosses, or worse, violate the morals contract that the morals clause that was in your contract at that time, which forbade engaging in any behavior that might be deemed socially unacceptable. So, you know, here you have the number one box office star in the world who has this secret, and there are mainstream magazines like Photoplay or Life magazine who are constantly asking the question that most of Rock's fans were, you know, if he's the hottest romantic idol in Hollywood, why is he not blissfully wed to one of these beautiful starlets that you constantly see him escorting to premieres? And then you have scandal sheets that existed back then, like Confidential, that are, you know, threatening to expose Rock. So a very dangerous game that's being played at that time. And, you know, as I say in All That Heaven Allows, the book, you know, Rock was under enormous stress and pressure. And to his credit, you know, all of the surviving co-stars that I interviewed said that he never brought these pressures to the set. He was always the consummate professional, very fun and mischievous, and, you know, very entertaining to be around most of the time. So you'd never know that he sort of had this monkey on his back, as it were.
Yeah, and it is true to say that that Wilson prevented publications like Confidential from outing him. He was quite successful in doing that.
Right. At one point, there even is sort of this exchange, if you will, going on. Henry Wilson, the agent, caught wind of the fact that Confidential's editors were offering as much as $10,000, which was a lot of money back then, to some of Hudson's former boyfriends for a tell-all about Rock. So to prevent Confidential from going public with any stories about Hudson, Wilson offered up a sort of trade. You know, he had another client, another star, Rory Calhoun, who had once been convicted for armed robbery. And so when you get to May of 1955, the headline on the front of the Confidential magazine exclaims, "Rory Calhoun, but for the grace of God, still a convict." And then a few months later, you know, the late Tab Hunter that we just lost a few months ago had recently fired Henry Wilson, and he becomes the subject of an even more damaging story detailing his participation in what the magazine termed an all-male pajama party. So what you have there is a trade-off that Wilson apparently brokered, where Rory Calhoun and Tab Hunter are sacrificed so that Confidential will back off of Rock Hudson and not publish what they know about him.
Yeah. Now, what is something that I didn't know, I have to say, was that the director, Robert Mulligan, wanted to cast Rock Hudson as Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird. And his partner, that's the producer, Alan J. Pakula, he was against it.
Right. Mulligan had directed Rock Hudson in a not-so-successful drama called The Spiral Road, but they did team together very successfully. And Mulligan thought that Rock was more than capable of taking on the role of Atticus Finch in this adaptation of Harper Lee's Pulitzer Prize-winning novel. Unfortunately, Mulligan's producing partner saw things differently and insisted that Gregory Peck be cast. In a sense, I think time proved the producer right that, you know, that was Gregory Peck's trademark role. He won an Oscar, very deserving of the acclaim that he had for that. One just wonders what Rock could have brought to Atticus Finch. Would there have been maybe a warmth that, you know, may not have been on full display with Gregory Peck? It's just an interesting thing to muse on.
Yeah. Now, I think it's right to say that he was the first high-profile personality to acknowledge that he had AIDS. Is that right?
That is correct, yes. The late journalist Randy Schultz, who wrote this remarkable book about the timeline of the AIDS epidemic, it's called And the Band Played On, he said there was AIDS before Rock Hudson and AIDS after. And I think what he meant by that is before Hudson made this public disclosure that he had AIDS in July of 1985, the administration here in Washington under President Reagan didn't seem to comprehend how devastating and far-reaching this global pandemic was. And so I think when Rock did make this disclosure and his diagnosis became public, suddenly AIDS is on the front page of every newspaper in the country. And it was no longer this disease that had stricken a few guys in Greenwich Village or Haitians or intravenous drug users. Now it's, you know, this disease has the power to take down one of the most legendary movie stars in the history of Hollywood. And it's just interesting to note that before Rock's death, the administration in Washington had recommended a $10 million cut in AIDS spending to the federal budget. After Hudson's death, there was suddenly this complete 360. And the House of Representatives announced that it was doubling AIDS-related funding and allotting over $100 million to HIV prevention and education efforts.
Yeah.
So what that shows you is not only the power of celebrity, but I think the power of Rock Hudson's particular and very distinctive celebrity that, you know, millions of moviegoers had watched him sort of grow up in front of their eyes, as it were. And now the boy next door has this dreaded disease. And finally, that was the thing that sort of made not only the, you know, government wake up to AIDS, but also I think middle America or the world, actually. You know, it finally gave AIDS a face, a very important, high-profile face.
Well, that's absolutely, it's fascinating, I have to say, as a wonderfully structured book, Mark.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
I sat down with it. I read it over three nights, and I just couldn't put it down. So thank you.
You're very kind.
Thank you very, very much for contributing to the program.
Oh, it's been a true pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
The Picture Show.
Is this where I'm going to be a star?
On News Talk.